I can't tell you how grateful I was the minute he left that we had that conversation, because at least he knew everything I felt. And the minute I was saying it to him in that car ride, I was heating up. My body was heating up. I kept hearing, not really my voice, but maybe it was my voice, a higher voice.
Yeah.
Tell him. Tell him. And I was like, he's 12 years old. Why am I going to have this conversation with him? It's a little much for a 12-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
Tell him. And I just told him. And then, you know, it went on to why we chose each other in this lifetime to be mother and son. I mean, we're talking about two people that have never talked about religion or God or spirituality. Right.
This was so out of the context of
who we were and as a family, that it almost was like preparing me for what was to come.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of Grief is a Sneaky Bitch podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Keith Farmer. I'm excited to bring you today's conversation. But first, I wanted to remind you that you can now find the unedited video interviews of the show on my new YouTube channel at Lisa Keith Farmer, MSW. See clips on Instagram and even TikTok sometimes at Lisa Keith Farmer, MSW, and get behind-the-scenes content in my not-so-regular newsletter at lisakeefarver.com/newsletter. So I've been thinking a lot lately about the conversations we have and more about the ones we don't have because we're scared or unsure or too angry to find the words. It's come up as I reflect on the recent death of someone in my life that I was estranged from. I never understood how or why they disappeared from my, and more so my daughter's life, and how they could do that with such apparent ease. These reflections have me doubling down on a practice I already have in my life, telling the people I care for that I love them. And not just that I love them, getting specific about what I love about them and how their presence in my life has impacted me. Is that something you already do? 5 years ago, while today's guest, Nikki Mark, was driving her 12-year-old son, Tommy, to a soccer game, he turned to her and asked, "Mom, is it possible to go to sleep and not wake up?" Nikki told him, "That's how one of his grandmothers passed away. It's the best way to go. No pain, no drama." He surprised Nikki further by stating, "It must be hard for a parent to lose a child." Something told her in that car ride to tell him all the things she loved about him. 3 days later, Tommy passed away in his sleep. There's still no medical explanation. Since that day, Nikki says she surrendered, and that act has taken her on a healing path unlike many others, one that has included psychics, mediums, psychedelics, astrologists, and more. Even more profoundly, she's brought her strength and sheer determination to fulfill the dreams of not just Tommy, but so many families in her community by fundraising and then donating public fields to create Tommy's Fields, an open-to-the-public athletic fields that keep Tommy's love of soccer and community alive and well. Friends, I'm so happy to welcome Nikki Mark to the podcast. Welcome, Nikki. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Thanks. Y'all watching on YouTube, I'm finally getting my act together and putting some stuff up on YouTube this season. You can see a copy of Nikki's beautiful book, Tommy's Field, which we're going to dive into today, which is your lived experience over the past many years. And there's so much beauty in here. And thank you for gifting us your story, Tommy's story. We're going to talk about Tommy a lot today. But I want to start our conversation where I start all my podcast conversations, and that's inviting us to sort of unpack the grief beliefs that we learned early in our lives. Can you take us back to think about an early loss you faced in your life? Could have been a death loss. It could have been some other form of loss. And how were the adults in your family modeling explicitly, implicitly, what grief should look like? What can you think of a story, a time in your early young life?
I had so little grief in my childhood. Yeah. I remember my mother's father passed away, my grandfather, I was young. I remember my father's father passed away, I was young, and I saw some tears, and that was it.
Okay.
And not that we didn't talk about my grandparents or my grandfathers who had passed, but not a lot. And I was young, I was a kid. I mean, what did I know? I wasn't really included in it. And quite honestly, for the first 48 years of my life, I was pretty untouched by loss and grief, other than the normal like heartbreaks of breaking up,
right.
the normal life stuff of growing up. So when my moment came, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
I had no preparation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sort of the good and the bad that you hadn't had that experience, right? And also even those of us who had early losses, I mean, one of the things that I, you know, offer through my work, through the podcast, through, all the things that I do is that, you know, no one single loss prepares you for the next loss, because all losses, there are some commonalities in our grief, but all losses are different and impact us differently based on the relationship we had with a person, based on, you know, the lived experience we had at that time. And sometimes we come to our big losses with a lot of distorted beliefs about how we should or shouldn't feel, how it should or shouldn't impact us. And that's why, just as a transparency, I always invite guests, my students, when I teach this course at UT, wherever I go, to really examine what beliefs we're holding on to. And if you will, what do we want to Marie Kondo out of our belief system that might be getting in our way? But it sounds like you came to this loss pretty without a lot of awareness around.
I was clueless. In fact, when people had loss around me, I really didn't know like what they felt. I had no idea how I would help them. I didn't have a lot of people with a lot of loss around me.
Yeah.
And if they did, they weren't talking to me about it. So I subsequently learned how many of them have had loss.
Yeah.
But I was not their go-to, and I certainly wouldn't have understood it. And you know, that's why when I had my moment, I realized, oh my, I would not know how to help somebody. And thank goodness these people are trying to help me, even if they don't know what to do.
Even if they don't
know, wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit. I'd love to start our conversation really by bringing Tommy's life into the room before we talk about his passing. You all will get to know Tommy throughout this book. I feel like I know him, his energy, his spitfireness, his enthusiasm. Tell us a little bit about your son, Tommy, and what he, I know you feel, and I believe that he still is here with us in this different form, but in his life, in his physical form here on earth, what did you know about, what do you want us to know about Tommy?
Yeah, Tommy was born just a really curious, enthusiastic kid who excelled at many things, especially the art of playing. And he played hard. He was always laughing and joking and smiling and dancing and playing every sport he could find. It's like there weren't enough hours in the day for this child. And as a parent, I mean, I remember running around with him and being like, is this normal?
Right. This limitless energy.
Limitless energy. But it was like, it wasn't just limitless. It was almost like a curiosity about everything and everyone. Yeah. It didn't matter who you were, what age you were, what your background was, what you liked, didn't like. If you want to talk politics, he'd talk politics and just make things up. If you wanted to talk sports, he would, you know, get on a horse and ride it as if he had his whole lifetime. And I was just kind of like, is this normal? And so, you know, when he left, one of the most glaring things that was missing about him was that spirit of play and laughter and the way he smiled when he played and all the people that started filling up our home and the community he brought to us. I didn't even know we had this community but this child had created it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of goes back to his preschool director who said, your kid like the mayor. He, you know, says hi to everybody and he's touching everybody's hand. And he's, you know, didn't matter if you were the janitor, the gardener, the parent, the child, the teacher. He wanted to know you and he made you feel like you're important and a fun friend to him.
I love that. I love that connector energy that Tommy had and has still, it seems to me, and the way in which he made people feel seen and important. It actually reminds me of my late husband had that energy. There's just some people who I feel show up in this iteration, in this form, in this life, who can just, you know, just with their gaze or their smile or their attention, they bring real intention to to their attention.
And they bring a lot of passion to the day, which brings a lot of emotions for good and bad, you know? And always a drama, and you're always in the middle of it. And he would, you know, it was always like, oh no, Tommy, what now?
Another,
what did you do now? You know, so it wasn't like he was perfect.
I love, but thank you for bringing that up, because I do think we try to like lionize the dead often, you know, just and want to paint this very two-dimensional picture of them. But Tommy was a full-fledged human, you know, preteen, you know, with all that we know that comes.
He was tricky. He would lie about, he would exaggerate. Yeah. He would just, you know, to make it more fun.
Yeah.
He just wanted life to be, he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was crazy, exhausting and a lot of fun. And,
he packed a lot into his, remind me, 12 years he passed?
Yeah, it was only a few weeks before his 13th birthday.
Before his 13th birthday.
It really feels like he lived as if he knew he only had.
That's what I was just about to say. I mean, you sort of allude to that in the book, I know, but even just as I read it, it felt like, as you described, his presence, his energy, his enthusiasm, his spirit of play, his connectedness, that he was getting everything out of life. And speaking of that, you know, one of the things that you shared in the book that you sort of, I believe, realized later or remembered later was that prior to Tommy's passing, which if you want to share a little bit about that, again, I want us to normalize talking about death, but I also don't want us to be a Kardashian exposure. So whatever you want to share, but you shared a story about the fact that maybe he knew, because on his way down, driving him down from LA to San Diego, which is where I live, I'm waving to you from here. He said something to you shortly before he passed. Do you want to share that story?
Yeah, we were driving and he said, is it possible to go to sleep and not wake up? He asked me that question. And I said, only if you're really, really old. Your grandmother passed away that way, but she was like 86 and it's the best way to go. No pain, no drama.
Yeah.
But that's when you're really old.
Yeah.
And he just kind of thought and, I asked him why, and he said, oh, I had a dream that happened to me. And I said, well, I don't know if you could die in your dream. I wasn't spiritual. I wasn't religious, but I kind of wasn't sure you could actually die in your dream. He goes, no, Mom, I died in my dream. And I was like, oh, well, don't worry. That only happens when you're really old. And then a couple minutes later on the drive, he said, you know, it must be really hard for a parent to lose a child. Mm. And I looked at him and I whipped my head, you know, to the passenger seat. And I said, well, what? Like,
yeah, where's this coming from?
Don't even worry about that. I go first. You'll be second. And I'm going to send you all these signs so that you know I'm still around. Let's talk about it. What signs should we have? And then we proceeded to have this whole conversation about life and death and the signs I would give. And I thought he was being curious and I thought we were having fun. And I proceeded to review his whole life with him. All the things I started telling you at the beginning of this podcast, like all the things I loved about him and how I was always a shy, private person. And he was so outgoing and how he did so much in his life. I wish I had done as a child and how proud I was of him, how much I loved him. So basically all the things that, I would want to say if I knew he was leaving. And so when he didn't wake up 3 days, when he went to sleep 3 days later and did not wake up, I thought back to the conversation and I thought, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What was happening here? Because this was a far bigger conversation than he and I on a human level understood.
Had ever had. Yeah.
Or ever had.
Yeah. And so few of us, even, you know, as adults with grown people with grown parents so rarely have. Although I think I'm sorry that it preceded that loss, but I think what a reminder to all of us, don't wait, have those conversations with the people that you love now. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you how grateful I was the minute he left that we had that conversation.
Yeah.
Because at least he knew everything I felt. And the minute I was saying it to him in that car ride, I was heating up. My body was heating up. I kept hearing not really my voice, but maybe it was my voice, a higher voice.
Yeah.
Tell him. Tell him. And I was like, he's 12 years old. Why am I going to have this conversation with him? It's a little much for a 12-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
Tell him. And I just told him. Yeah. And then, you know, it went on to why we chose each other in this lifetime to be mother and son. I mean, we're talking about two people that have never talked about religion or God or spirituality.
Right. This was so out of the context of
of who we were and as a family that it almost was like preparing me for what was to come.
So magical. And to be able to, as you said, immediately use that as a touchstone, as an anchor point when the world, your entire world, you know, turns upside down. You're living every parent's worst fear. And it seems to me you found out later on through the series of testing and research, et cetera, this was a fluke, congenital heart situation that would not have shown up in any testing. Period.
Yeah.
Right? Is that?
Yeah. My instincts from the beginning was that this was some sort of bigger plan.
Yeah.
The homicide detectives in my home that day, which was what is that? But I realized I was in like a really bad movie at the time and I could barely speak. They're asking me questions. And one of them said, listen, don't beat yourself up. A young girl was at UCLA up the street. Had 24 hours of emergency tests and then went home and passed away. Like there's just some things we do not know.
Yeah.
And so they've studied his heart. They have found a congenital issue. They're not certain that that would be what caused it. They never would have found it. They never would have done the testing required to have found it.
Yeah.
He had no symptoms or signs of that particular condition prior. And so we didn't go down that rabbit hole of needing that answer because at the end of the day, the result was the same.
Yeah.
And I was becoming more curious about the fact that, wait a minute, we had this conversation.
Yeah.
And wait a minute, I remembered back to your first question you asked me that I had great-great-grandparents who had lost a 12-year-old boy too. Mm. And I had only learned that about 6 months before Tommy passed away. And I asked my family, this is early 1900s.
Yeah.
What happened to that boy? And why didn't I know about this? And I was told they didn't talk about those things in those days.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wait a minute. I have a cycle in my family.
Yeah.
Not normal to lose two 12-year-old boys four generations apart. This time, whatever healing needs to be done, I'm going to do it right for the benefit of myself, Tommy, my entire family line, because I do not want this cycle to continue.
Yeah.
But that was my impression. That's all I knew about grief.
Yeah. And that full sort of, or that intergenerational connection. And I want to dive into the healing because, boy, did you go into all kinds of healing modalities and exploration. And I really appreciate that. I'm curious for those folks who are listening, because I have listeners from all backgrounds, including a lot of parents who've lost children in various ways. And not surprisingly, many people go to what could I have known? What did I see kind of in that kind of rumination or replaying? There's guilt, there's shame. I mean, my husband was misdiagnosed for a year. And even though I argued with doctors, I still for a long time thought if I would have just said the right thing or pushed the right, you know, et cetera. So do you think really it was that conversation, that divine intervention that you had previous that allowed you to not go down the rabbit hole of should I have known, could I have known all the shoulda wouldas that so many of us go through?
I did the shoulda coulda wouldas.
Okay.
Sometimes I still do. I mean, if only I had paid attention in that conversation and driven him straight to the hospital. If only I had taken more seriously certain things, like how could I have been sleeping while he left over? There are so many woulda, shoulda, could've, but every time I started to go down that path, I went back to the conversation and I said, wait a minute, this is some sort of plan. I just got to play my part in it now. And that I could not, I couldn't sink in it. I couldn't sink in the what ifs, and I couldn't go down the trail of blaming doctors and trying to find out exactly what it was. My passion wasn't necessarily fixing an unknown medical condition that was congenital. That wasn't where my heart was. Yeah. My heart was, how can I honor my son in a way that's a testament to what he brought to this world?
Yeah.
And what do I need to learn from that and embody? And I realized, oh, if it's playing, then I got to learn how to do that too.
And I loved that theme throughout the book. And I love that Tommy gifted you and now all of us that reminder for passion and play simple. I know he said to you kind of so often, play being something that feels so impossible to those of us in early grief, right? That seems antithetical to the experience that we're living. And yet, at whatever point we can get there, there's a reminder that this life, this at least this iteration, if you believe in multiple lives, right, is a gift. And it's, we have no idea how long it is. And play, and which is really about being present to what is, right, to the gift of this world, is so important. Not to mention, by the way, just as a scientific little tidbit, if you play, it actually reduces the stress response in your body. So you're going to feel better. So even if you don't feel like playing, playing can actually help you feel better. So just in case you need an excuse. But you pretty quickly, I wanted you to take us back. You said Tommy had always been into every sport. He had a ball by his foot. He was, you know, breaking windows and kicking the ball around from the get-go. He had an older half-brother, stepbrother, right, who had played sports. So he'd been around that and had always always been part of soccer leagues. And as you said, sort of being a mayor, so connecting with people of all kinds of backgrounds. And given his passion and your passion for him, before his death, you had already started on a project, an idea to build a soccer field in your community in Westwood. Is that right, Westwood?
Yeah.
In LA. And it was Tommy's death and the suggestion of a friend early on to really turn this idea into real life in honor of Tommy. Tell us a little bit about the beginning of Tommy's Field and that, like the spark and the inspiration for that. Yeah.
So in Los Angeles, we suffer from a lack of public playing fields for children. It's a dense city. It's a dry city. A lot of our park land is dried up. And down the street at a park was a massive piece of land with holes in it for over 20 years, just sitting there in the middle of a public park. And we would always go there and Tommy would lament, why can't we play on it? It was either like super hard, like cement or muddy and gushy and horrible in the winters. And so during that drive to San Diego, he asked me what my next job was going to be. I came from the startup world. I did three different startups and I had just finished one. I had a couple months off and I think he was just sick of me being around already. And he was like,
Mom, what are you going to do?
What's your next one, Mom? And I said, I don't know. It just has to be really meaningful. And I'm thinking about refurbishing that field in the park for kids to play on and make it a soccer field or athletic field. He's like, that's so cool, Mom. We don't have anything like that. I can't wait to play on it. Mm. So when he left 3 days later, and a friend had already known I was in contact with the city about it. I was already in designs. I knew it was over $1 million. I had no idea how I was going to raise the money.
Yeah.
But I was in the startup world and I figured I'll find a way. Anyways, he was gone. And then my friend said, let's build that field, Tommy's Field. Let's honor his spirit of play, share it with others. And my husband and I and our whole community rallied around. And literally the day he left, Tommy's Field was born. And it became an effort for an entire community to fundraise and pour our grief into. And even though it became a political drama I never expected, even that became part of the Tommy of it all. Like, of course, it was going to be.
And you'd have to practice playing simple and all the things.
Of course. And so Yeah. So the whole, as this political drama ensued, I just kept hearing soccer and being guided by the voice of soccer and by feeling like he was guiding me.
Yeah.
And the game he loved so much was guiding me, and that I was actually learning how to play again in life myself.
I love that so much. There's so many directions I want to go because you offered us so many things, both in the book and even just there. Maybe I'll start with just the fact that you continue to have conversations with Tommy or T. I noticed you sometimes call him T, right?
Yeah.
Or Tommy. That you're continuing to be in conversation. Sometimes it's like a conversation and sometimes you're fighting the fight. And we'll talk a little bit about that next to get this park, which seems crazy that it's a fight, but it has been to get this park made. And he's giving you the what for, or sending you emojis. Tell me about, did that happen immediately? Did you just immediately, since his passing, start having conversations with him? And what does that sound like and feel like? Yeah.
So the second he left and but we knew he wasn't coming back, like that minute, I completely broke open and I surrendered. I had, again, no religion, no faith. I believed in something. I didn't know what.
Yeah.
Never called it anything and didn't really have time to think about it much. But the minute he was gone, I broke open and I surrendered, like, to the universe. I just said, universe, I surrender. What do you want me to do? Like, I'm at my knees here. What do you want me to do?
When we come back, Nikki explains what it meant to her to surrender in the wake of the worst thing that ever happens to a parent, the death of their child. She explores the spiritual and alternative paths she's traveled since and the magic it has brought to her life. You're listening to Grief is a Sneaky Bitch podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Kefauver. Friends, we are just over 2 months away from my book, Grief is a Sneaky Bitch, an uncensored guide to navigating loss, hitting bookstores. Oh my God. Actually, this week, I'm in the studio recording the audiobook version, and it has been so much fun to do. I really feel like I'm talking directly to each and every one of you. There are three things to know about the book release. One, you don't have to wait. You can pre-order it now on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And when you do, message me on Instagram or info@lisakefauver.com to get an invite to my fabulous Zoom pre-launch party on my birthday, May 22nd. And two, I'm removing the distance between the screen and mic by hitting the road starting publication day, June 4th. I'm adding cities all the time, but I'm starting here in San Diego and then heading to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Boston, and of course my hometown, Ann Arbor. Go Blue. To find out if I'm coming to a city near you, sign up for my not-so-regular newsletter. And three, you know by now, I love being in conversation. That's why at each of my book stops, I will be in conversation with a favorite author, many of whom you have heard on this show, like Melissa Gould, author of Widowish, Steph Jagger, author of Everything Left to Remember, and so many more. I can't wait to meet you, hug you, answer your questions, and of course, take those selfies together. We can share them on Instagram at LisaKefauverMSW. Friends, I got the sweetest note the other day from a listener. Oh, my heart. Patricia emailed me at info@lisakefauver.com to say this. I wanted to let you know that I pre-ordered your book and I'm excited for it to be published. You don't know this, but you and I walk together most every day through the joy of your podcasts. And I finally figured out how to leave a 5-star review. Though you are deserving of far more than just 5 stars. Thank you for being a healing presence in the grief world. I cannot tell you how much her note meant to me, how much it means to me every time I see a new 5-star rating, read a kind review, and get notes like these in my inbox. Hosting this show is absolutely 100% a highlight of my life. And yet, since I don't do them live yet, I don't always hear how it impacts the audience. So please take a few minutes after the show today, head to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, follow the show, then click all 5 stars to leave a rating, and click that pen button to write a review about what the show has meant to you. Also, I'm thinking about getting a voicemail set up so you can leave me questions to answer on the show from time to time. Would you like that?
All of a sudden, I had new senses turn on. All of a sudden, I had visible signs coming at me. We had hawks, you know, that other people were noticing. I had televisions coming on.
Yeah.
I had some of his favorite songs and roses and things coming into my life and that I couldn't just ignore. Plus, I had dreams that were starting to lead me and teach me and guide me. And I had a whole magical world begin to open up to me that I didn't understand. I had never experienced before, but I wanted to know more about because I thought, I wonder if it's possible to connect spiritually. If energy never dies, that was the one thing I remembered from high school,
right?
Thermodynamics class. Where does it go? And so I began reading and reading and writing and writing and exploring and testing for myself. Is it possible to connect spiritually? Because I was hearing him and I was feeling him and I was seeing signs of him. And as we were building Tommy's field, it was very, very helpful.
Yeah.
He was very, very helpful.
Yeah. It was amazing. I mean, I certainly my late husband and even my friend Joe, who's also passed, come to me occasionally in dreams, but not in the ways in which, and sometimes in daytime conversations, but not in the ways that you described. And I think for everyone reading this book, which is just such a beautiful, powerful story, by the way, you don't have to experience the loss of a child to find so much inspiration and beauty and important reminders from this book. But just the ways in which he showed up and that you were, as you said, you were sort of open to that. It really sounds like you opened your way up. You very early on started to see a medium, a healer, plant medicine ceremonies. I mean, I don't know the order there, but they started, my recollection was quite quickly. What was that, just part of that? Like, okay, I'm surrendering. Let me see what I can see. And what did you get from each of those things?
Yeah, I had a yoga instructor who was a friend come over, asked how she could help. And I was already getting, it was a couple of weeks after he left, or maybe a week after he left, and I was getting chest pains and I couldn't breathe. I was getting physical symptoms from my emotional sickness.
Yeah, which
and
we do, yeah, yeah.
I knew I was going to be a mess if I didn't clean this up fast. I had a younger son who I wanted to be the best mom I could be for and give him the best life he could have, and I needed to heal to be that mom.
Yeah.
And so
put on your own oxygen mask first, people. It is not just something that, you know, flight attendants say. It's true. Yeah.
It's very true. And so she told me, she asked me, what do you think about life and death? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't. She goes, well, do you have a belief system? I said, not really. Not yet. It was a week after he had passed. And she goes, figure one out. And once you do, and you read these things and here's some healers and here's some books and start to explore. And I knew that, I finally understood what depression was. I finally understood what darkness meant. As I told you, I had so little of that. I had such a beautiful childhood. For the first time, I understood what people felt like to be in a dark place. And
to kind of be walking through the mud of the world hazy, foggy, muddy.
And having
life
no
experience.
Idea where you're going and how you're going to take another step.
Yeah.
And not
take
even
another breath.
Or if you even want to. And I realized so much of the world feels like this because the numbers are going up and whether they've lost someone they love or not. And it didn't seem to me like talk therapy was working fast enough for people or that prescription medications were working deep enough for people. At least I didn't think they would for me. And so I began to explore everything that had the potential to like heal my soul. This was not a, my mind was not a mess. I didn't need more people.
Because your grief was a normal response to loss, as grief is. Thank you very much, even though we like to pathologize it. Yeah.
And a therapist said to me, how can I help you? Your head is fine. Your heart is broken. And I thought, if you don't know how to help me, I don't know how to help myself. And so I appreciated it. And I just went off and I thought, you know, all these other modalities, I spoke to a medium a week after he was gone. I was so desperate. I wanted to know, why do I keep hearing and seeing and feeling things? What is this? Is he still here? And I spoke with the medium and I'm telling you, within, you know, that 60 minute call, I got off the phone feeling so much lighter, feeling like I had this connection still. And when she told me all of his hopes and his dreams that we had discussed in that car ride down to San Diego, when she said, thank God you had that conversation before he left, when she described his friends by name, these are things that were not on the
internet. Nobody would know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I just got curious and I thought to myself, well, if there's a chance a regular person like me could create a world like this, where I'm living in this physical world with my younger son and learning how to do this again.
Yeah.
And play in this life and enjoy it, live fully again. But also open up this whole other world magically and stay connected with my son and maybe bridge the two in some way.
Yeah.
I could spend the rest of my life trying to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's really
like that's a life worth living. Yeah.
That's a life worth living and that's meaningful. And even if people think I'm crazy, it doesn't really matter. If it's meaningful and I'm enjoying it and I'm doing good things with it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've done. And Tommy's Field, the book, is one of the products of that. And so with Tommy's Field, the fields.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the TM23 Foundation, et cetera. I just want to unpack because I haven't often had people on the show who, at least openly through their book, et cetera, have talked about all of these different modalities and ways in which, you know, we often refer to in sort of grief literature and in the academic setting, like, you know, part of the work of grief is carrying your person forward. Right. In this, but we often think about that in a sort of like telling stories, which is important. I'm not dismissing this by any means, by the way, but it's more about sort of storying your person and bringing and maybe doing acts of service in the world that bring to light, which in a way is what you're doing with Tommy's Field. But you've dove into other ways of really, it seems to me, being in present relationship with him in ways that I don't often hear people describing. So going through doing healing work with, I think Christopher was his name, and even using kind of like a plant medicine to really be in relationship with him. What are you, tell us, can you tell us a little bit about
that? So after that first medium appointment, I, and my dreams were, you know, he was in my dreams and ancestors were in my dreams. And I just got more and more curious and I thought, what else is out there? Yeah. And each step I took led me to a new healing modality that I wanted to try. Meditation was like desperation for me. I was not the kind of person who would meditate, but even just finding breath work and meditation and sticking with it long enough to feeling it lift my grief and bring in more connection. So I was getting like downloads I couldn't even understand and beautiful images of my future. And that led me to really feeling more connected. And then I was brought to actually someone who was a cancer survivor who had done some hallucinogenic magic mushrooms journey ceremonies, said this had really helped her a lot. She thought it could help me. I was like, I'll try anything. This suffering is so bad and I need to keep, I've got a legacy to build for my son. I want to honor him and I got a child I want to live for.
Yeah.
And I got to get through this suffering somehow. And so I sat with someone private one-on-one and did a hallucinogenic journey, magic mushrooms. And I connected with Tommy and got so many messages directly. That I couldn't deny that were so in line with what I would be later told by other types of spiritual healers that, and I've learned there are so many kinds.
Yes, there are.
It's like everybody's got a skill and a knack and they develop it on their own because it either comes from their lineage or they just are their own entrepreneurs. It's all they know.
Yeah.
And each one helped me address another layer of myself. And at the end of the day, like the oxygen mask rule, you know, I really believe we all have something to heal. Our hearts are all healing from something, whether it's this lifetime or our family's lifetime before us. Some of these cycles, maybe we just, they made their way to us. But if
sometimes we're healing for the people that didn't heal before us. Absolutely.
And we're healing
that.
For our children and their children. Like we want to pass this stuff on. No. And so I've really come to believe that when we're willing to look at ourselves and heal our own hearts, no matter what we've been through, we will find a lot about ourselves. And there's so many alternative ways to get there. From acupuncture and meditation and energy healers and body work and breath work, which is like being on a hallucinogenic journey or on your, you know, yourself. There's just so many ways and no one needs to feel fixed that they need to do what's, you know, traditionally acceptable. Or that you're limited by your options. Quite frankly, I have found this more alternative route to be a lot less expensive. Many of them are one-time appointments.
Yeah.
And then they say, go on your way. And even astrology, I was blown away by how much they knew about me and my son by comparing our birth charts, one right next to each other. And for me, this is just fun. Yeah. It's fun.
Back to that idea of play, by the way, too, to just be curious. I mean, that thread of curiosity is so powerful. Yeah.
And it got me from week to week to week. Oh, well, maybe this will be interesting. Oh, that'll be interesting. And then once I had a good experience, I decided, well, I need to test this. So I would do three of each ones with different people of the same modality because I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
In theory, the messages should be the same if it's the same modality. And I was only disappointed once or twice. Yeah. Everyone else was from someone I trusted who led me to someone I trusted. And then like a little, you know, scientist, I went to explore literally my own heart and my own soul. And the more I began to understand it and the more I began, then the more I began to heal it and the more I'm healing. And I do believe healing is a lifetime journey.
100%. We are ING. We are not ED. We don't get to be
done.
We
are healing. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone asked me the other day, when did you feel healed? I said, oh, no. Let me tell you.
Talk to me in 10 lifetimes from now.
Let me tell you how I felt an hour ago. But it is a journey of a lifetime of healing and I'm committed to it.
Yeah.
And I do it the way that lifts me. It makes me feel better. It keeps me connected with both of my boys and that's how I like to live.
I love that. Thank you so much for helping us understand and for reminding all of us the gift that we can bring. I say this all the time, so my listeners are probably tired of it, but like curiosity is the most underrated way to be in the world. And so as you're moving through and forward with your grief, to be curious about whether it's modalities or what you're learning or about your own experience, other people's experience, so powerful. And as you're going through all these healing modalities, you're beginning what turned out to be a surprising fight for Tommy's field. But I promise we'll get there. But, you know, one curiosity I had as you're talking, I've spoke with folks who've lost children over the years on the show, of course, in my one-on-one work, in all the work that I do. And often we hear couples struggling because, as we all know, we all have different grief styles. We all have different ways of dealing with our loss. And I'm curious how the paths that you and Doug, I think is your husband's name, took, and how did you all mirror or support or friction, which happens too, because we all have different styles. Tell me a little bit about how you each navigated along this, you know, this, the worst thing that could happen to a parent.
Yeah, that morning he took my hand and he said, "We will not be a tragic family." And I looked at him and I could barely hear what he was saying. My head was echoing so loudly with grief. And he said it again, "We will not be a tragic family." And I said, okay. And we agreed Donovan, you know, our younger son would be the priority and we would figure this out. and find a way forward together, all of us. And that was sort of commitment number one. In terms of grieving, we grieve very differently and yet the same. My husband was a very open person like Tommy.
Yeah.
And that's who he is. I was a very private, quiet person. So the minute everyone started showing up in our home, and my husband put it on Facebook to his community, what had happened, I took a second of, and then I realized, here we go. This is how Tommy was. This is how my husband needs to grieve. He needs community. Let's go.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to control that. And I learned from him how important it is to be open to that. So he really pulled me from the very beginning into what community is all about and why it matters. And I'm like, had I resorted to my normal ways
of sort of isolation or retreat. Yeah.
I might have shut that one of my biggest lessons out, and biggest support systems out. At the same time, he went back to work after a couple of weeks. I mean, I don't know how much he worked. He was always talking about Tommy to everybody, and that made me talk to Tommy about, you know, just keep our story alive. Unlike my great great grandparents who never did. And I went on the spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And he was sort of like, huh?
I was going to ask, was this all a surprise? It sounds like, because it was a surprise to you.
It was a surprise to me. Yeah. And I told him after I spoke with a medium and here's what she said. And he was like, how did she know all that? And I said, I don't know.
It's a good question.
But I wasn't trying to convince him. I wanted him to know and I wanted to see what he felt about it. And then a few weeks later, he said he'd like to speak to a medium too. And that he had learned from other friends who he had not known had lost children, because a lot of people don't talk about it, who finally came out to him and said, you know, I lost someone, a child 25 years ago, et cetera. And the one thing that had helped them the most, more than any other type of healing modality, therapy, meds, everything they had ever tried, was speaking to a medium one time.
Yeah.
And so we did together.
Yeah.
So we had a small connection of spirituality. Yeah. I, of course, then went really deep into all these things on a very big journey and exploring everything. And he was sort of like, okay, he'd roll his eyes at one, but then he'd try another. Or he'd be like, you know, 6 weeks behind me, but then he'd dabble and test it out. And so we have stayed connected by a common mission, which was prioritizing our younger son.
Yeah.
And being the parents he needs to have a beautiful life and to honor Tommy.
Yeah.
We had two big visions, much greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
And we gave each other the space, and we continue to do so, to heal in our own unique ways and try not to judge each other too much for that.
Yeah.
If anyone's judging more, it would be him judging me for all my craziness. But at the end of the day, I'm here 6 years later, smiling and present. And I think I've done a lot of healing, not just for me, but for our whole family. And with everything else we've done together, we're doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about that path. And there were so many rich gems that you offered there, which is that we don't have to agree to be on the same page in terms of our style or what resources support us as we navigate our own healing work. We just have to withhold judgment to the best that we can, because we're naturally judging creatures. So if you have judgment, it's okay. But then to notice and to have that kind of higher purpose and that higher vision, and to keep bringing that present, because it's easy to lose sight of that when the pain, when the well of grief comes over us, it's very easy to sort of forget about that higher order purpose and just really react from that sort of guttural, visceral space. But it sounds like you and Doug continue to have those conversations and to keep that sort of higher visions present. When we come back, Nikki explains the various paths of grief she, her husband, and other son have taken. She also reveals her at times harrowing and contentious, but ultimately victorious journey to bring Tommy's Fields to the world, both an act of memorializing her son and an act of generosity to her community. I'm your host, Lisa Kefauver, and you're listening to Grief is a Sneaky Bitch podcast. You may have heard that I took a break from taking on new individual clients in 2023. As I navigated breast cancer treatment, I did, however, continue to see former clients on a drop-in basis. As I move into the final phase of my treatment and am feeling stronger, I'm happy to say, I'm opening just a few spots for new clients soon. I'm offering a 6-session package that is ideal for newly grieving individuals facing all kinds of loss, death, illness, divorce, or relationship ending, major life transitions, and more, or individuals further down the road who are looking for specialized grief care as a supplement to other therapeutic supports. Over our time together, you will feel held and cared for, have a chance to tap inward to discover your existing skills and resources, discover some of the barriers or shoulds getting in your way, cultivate a mindfulness practice essential for easing suffering, identify your emerging needs as a griever, and begin to build the community of support you will need as you continue on your journey. After you complete your 6-session package, you will be considered an existing client and qualified to sign up for check-in and tune-up sessions as available. Open enrollment periods happen only a few times per year. To learn more and reserve your spot today, after the show, visit lisakefauver.com/support. Grief isn't on a schedule, and neither is my newsletter. That's why I call it the not-so-regular newsletter. Still, from time to time, I drop into your inbox with a new essay, a writing prompt or practice for you, news about my book and book tour, and sometimes behind-the-scenes scoops about this podcast. I would love to show up for you, too. It's easy. Just sign up for my free newsletter after the show by visiting lisakefauver.com/newsletter.
I also had a healer. I had an astrologist early on. This sounds crazy because I didn't even know the art of astrology at that time, but it compare my natal chart with my husband's and my kids. I wanted to know how this was impacting all of us. And she was the first person to say to me, you know, this loss is going to impact you differently. All of you. It's going to impact you differently. You're designed, Nikki. It will impact what you do in this life, your career, everything moving forward. You will begin, you know, and then they went off on tell me what I do. And then for my husband, it would change not his career, but who he wanted to be. And for my younger son, something else. It was the first time I realized, oh, loss impacts us all differently. It sounds so basic, but when you have never had any before in your life, you think, you don't understand that. You just think, why doesn't anyone feel the way I feel? Why aren't you moving forward the way I think we should move forward?
Especially when it's the same people losing the same person. You have this assumption, but we have to be reminded we are different people and we had a different relationship with that same person. And that's why, though there are a lot of commonalities, you know, that we experience across loss, that's why we each experience it differently, because we are different people and we were in different relationship with that same person that we lost. And that awareness is what allows us to give ourselves and other people grace, I think, right? But when we don't know it, we're sometimes not so likely to give other people grace and space, because it's like, wait, well, how come you're behaving that way?
Just knowing that we might be designed differently at birth for a reason actually gives you a lot more freedom and a lot more compassion for the way other people want to go about healing or approaching loss. So just knowing that was a complete game changer, because all of a sudden I had the space to heal however I wanted, and so did he, because we were designed differently.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And that just takes away the shoulda, woulda, couldas. It takes away those shoulds and all the judgments and the rules. I love that expansiveness. And even that has a kind of a playful, curious spirit to it, right? That runs through there. So here you each of you are doing your healing work, bringing your son Donovan along. And I know your older stepson, Ethan, and you are charged by your community. And it felt in the beginning like the entire community was together on this mission to turn that sort of unused, unarable land into a place where people of all backgrounds could gather and play and have sport. And you fundraised, I don't know, I forgot, $1 million or something insane to gift to the city to turn this into Tommy's Field. And you start heading to public meetings thinking, yeah, I got the community behind us. We are here. This is Tommy's Field. This is going to be a public space for everybody to enjoy. And then the politics of life happen. Tell us a little bit about some of those early confrontations and how Tommy showed up even there to help you get through that surprising political battle that you had to face.
Yeah, we thought the fundraising was going to be the hardest part. Right. It was a $1.2 million and we had no idea how that was going to come together. But like I said, a community we didn't know we had showed up. I think Tommy sprinkled some fairy dust and people put together from children selling lemonade and giving birthday money to people holding concerts, blah, blah, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
We raised it. The city wanted it. And then we showed up to the first public meeting and there were about a couple dozen neighbors who lived next to the park who stood up and said, we do not want this at all. We do not want more soccer. We do not want more kids. We don't want more whistles. There's parking. There's all these various issues. And meanwhile, the park was empty for decades with this massive piece of land in the middle of it, public land that was designated for athletics and multiple sports that nobody could use. And I stood there thinking, what now? What? Like, well, how could this possibly be happening? All we're trying to do is give a gift and honor our son. There's no other motive.
Yeah. And a gift that would ripple and improve the community as you and your folks saw it. So the sort of dissonance that anybody, let alone dozens of people, it sounds like, would have a kind of visceral reaction.
But I was working with different healers. Christopher is one in my book who I had started working with and was teaching me about my nervous system and how to calm it so I could find a more balanced state. And I don't know what happened in my healing. All I know is after seeing him that day and after reading and learning and growing through my grief, I couldn't really feel their comments. Like it was as if we were vibrating on completely different wavelengths. And the truth is, after losing a child, anything seems fixable. Like in life, they just seem like small problems. And I just thought, oh, this is just a small problem. We'll fix this. Like this is nothing compared to what I've been through.
You and talked about really being able to be grounded in your nervous system and to almost, you know, I almost pictured Wonder Woman's, do you remember that? Her bracelets, like, you know, like that their comments were just kind of ricocheting off you in this way. Not that you were trivializing it, but a different person might have felt that as a real soul wound.
Oh, my husband was furious. Yeah, and I was like, why don't I feel these people? It's like I had a barrier around me that they could not penetrate me. And I was, you know, I was learning about my heart. I was living with my heart. And when you live with your heart and you explore what that means and make a commitment to it, all of a sudden you're not playing the mind game of, oh, tit for tat.
And you're not in that reactionary mode, right?
This was love. Yeah. Love was driving me in for this field. And I was getting anger and hate and all I had was love. And when I remembered what this was about, that would drive me forward. And all of a sudden I would hear, you know, Tommy and the game of soccer, like, mom, you know, it's time to learn defense. You're going to learn defense. And I kept asking myself what so many well-known healers will say and authors say, you know, what do I have to learn from this situation? And that's what I did with, and that's what I do with everything. I no longer look at why are people like that? And who, you know, why would they do that? I'm like, why would this be happening right now? Because I have been through so much. There is no way that this is happening to hurt me more.
Yeah. There's a learning opportunity. I call those AFCOs, another fucking growth opportunity.
That's great.
But that's really a lens that you start to apply to your lived experience, especially when you have found your way forward in your healing from, you know, the when the worst thing did happen to you, and you can then start to view the world through that lens. It's a completely different lived experience, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I asked myself that question, and the answer I got back was they feel unheard. And I thought to myself, I know what that feels like. I lived a life where I held back my voice. I held back opinion. And this process of building Tommy's Field helped me find my voice like no other.
Yeah.
And it helped me find a true voice that wasn't based on reaction and anger and I'll win. And I had already lost this whole game. My son was gone. There was no big win for me. It was simply a gift. Yeah. And the truth is that Tommy's Field became a microcosm of this world. Those on the other end of it didn't understand the gift. They didn't trust the gift. And they didn't think that somebody could just want to do something for the community to honor and serve and have no other reason.
Benefit of it. Yeah. There was that suspicion of this, the transactional culture that we have come to be a part of, is the lens through which they are showing up in the world. Do you feel like even not just finding your own voice, but that coming from that place of love, even as you're, you know, at these meetings after meetings where people are taking out campaigns and building websites. And I mean, it got ridiculous. As I'm reading it, my jaw was like, I was sort of my jaw dropping, but also like, okay, yeah, a current humanity situation. But as you're doing this, not only are you finding voice and you're learning defense, as Tommy invited you to do, also then listening even to the opposition with love, helping them feel heard. Was that a part of that process too?
Yeah, I listened to all of their public comments. I tried to meet with some of them outside of meetings to try to come to a resolution. And then I realized one day, I mean, I heard it. It was like, stop. Enough. Yeah.
Okay.
And there was no way there's nothing I could do to change their mind. I could only move forward with, you know, all my love and all my best intentions and trust.
Yeah.
That if Tommy's Field was going to happen, Tommy would find a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sorry, spoiler alert, everybody. Tommy found a way.
We found a way.
We found a way together.
Fun,
you guys.
Yeah,
very fun. So Tommy's Field is now a reality?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about
now,
it.
Actually.
Yes. Tell us about that.
The first one in Westwood, the one that we had this...
like 9-month battle or something.
It was 9-month battle. Yeah. It opened in fall of 2021 and everyone loves it. It's been such a big addition to the community. And even those who fought against it wish they hadn't and love it. Then their kids love it. And it's for all kinds of sports and all kinds of people. And there's no lock and there's no fence. And it's a full-size adult field with lights. And it's really beautiful. And
how does it feel when you show up there now?
It's unbelievable to show up and watch people playing on something that your son basically gifted for all of them.
Yeah.
And not just him, but thousands of people were part of building it.
Right.
So I always tell people, when you show up, and you read this book, like, this is our book. This is our field. Like, we did this together. Whether you gave a dollar or more, or you showed up to fight with the city, or everybody played a part, and it was really, really beautiful. And during the whole battle of political drama, another school in Los Angeles that has been here for over 100 years and serves some of our most challenged children in the city said, we want a Tommy's Field too. We have a piece of dirt land sitting empty and we want kids to play on it, rain or shine. It's how they learn best.
Yeah.
And we went there and we said, oh yeah, Tommy would definitely want to be here. And so we just recently opened a second field last year, at the end of summer of 2023. And it serves this beautiful school that supports foster care and mental health and all different kinds of families. And also it serves the greater Los Angeles area after school and on weekends. So now we're, you know, lifting the world through play for all kinds of children and families.
And being a connector and community, just like Tommy.
He's still going.
Still going and still kind of being the star, which he wanted to be, right? Because he had aspirations of being
exactly
a professional soccer player and being a broadcaster. I know you shared and kind of being a part of the world. And now he lives on too, and all of these things. And his purpose here on earth is living on in all of this work.
Yeah, it feels like he just keeps growing and learning with me together. And I'm a little human vehicle helping to achieve some of what he came here to do. And as kind of the first medium I spoke to told me that he said, "You'll do it all in for me, Mom, in my name, whatever it is you're going to do," because she didn't know what I was going to do. "You're going to do it all for him in his name." But he says at the end of the day and at the end of the your life, it'll be for you too.
Yeah.
Don't forget.
Yeah. And but you feel that already, right?
It's like, but it's okay. You could do it for him in his name, but it is going to be for you too, Mom. And I do feel like that. And I feel like we can either put the people we love behind us or we can carry them with us. And then we suddenly are driven by this love that's so magical. That keeps growing.
Yeah. Just like sort of that resistance and that anger has that kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, as does love. And wouldn't we all just rather live in a world that has this never expanding love? And to carry our people with us in that way is not just a gift to them and to us, but a gift to the people who get to be in Tommy's light too. I think about that all the time. Of course, I get to talk about my late husband, Eric, who had a very similar energy to Tommy. And I was just giving a keynote a couple weeks ago, and it happened to be on Eric's birthday. And here I'm in front of, 300, 400 people in this thing. And in the middle of my talk, I just said, I just have to tell you that I can feel Eric smiling right now, because Eric kind of had one of those, he would just look at you. And it's his birthday, and I'm wondering if we could wish him happy birthday. And 300 plus strangers just yelled out, "Happy birthday, Eric." And I know. It was like, okay, but I still have to give a talk, you guys. Like, the tears came. I kind of mustered him back. I share that story just in a way. You don't have to do it as a Tommy's Field. You don't have to do it as a keynote speaker. You can do it in the coffee shop, talking to the barista, wherever you are. You can bring this person with you, their purpose, their love, their light with you in all these small little ways. We don't have to sort of leave behind. And it doesn't have to look, as I said, like, it doesn't have to be a Tommy's Field. It doesn't have to be a nonprofit you start, which I also did. It doesn't have to be. It can be in the smallest ways, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was an entrepreneur. I'd worked for soccer teams. I had built fields before. This was a natural fit for me and my family, with a child who loves sports so much in a city that doesn't have enough field. It just it just all came together.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think the lesson in it is that as painful as it is to open our hearts after loss and just love somebody so much that you don't know how you're going to move on without them.
Yeah.
But if you could just keep that heart open,
yeah,
and just keep feeding it, whatever makes it feel just a little bit lighter for a second, that's when you know you're supposed to go in that direction.
Yeah.
It may not be logical. It may not make sense to anybody.
Yeah.
But that's going to help you find your way one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that love of that person just keeps growing, and it just keeps pouring into everything you do. And all of a sudden, you're kind of living with two. You're not one, the same person, but you become more of yourself. I don't know. I feel like I have growing so much. I'm so grateful. I'd throw it all away to have him back here. I mean,
let's
be honest.
Yep. We all would. Yeah. It's not a but, it's an and.
It's not a but.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, look how much we're doing together.
Yeah.
Like, it's so meaningful to me.
Yeah.
And to us, soccer fields may not be to other people, but everyone's got their thing.
But the ripple effect there, which, by the way, you won't even ever truly be able to comprehend, is happening.
Yeah.
And what you are doing is rippling community, connection, love. You are rippling the things that he stood for, that you stand for. And that's such a powerful legacy.
And by the way, especially us women, as we get older, like, we don't know how to play very much, and we serve everyone else, and we forget. And I think the message of play and how much I've learned about how it heals and how it unites and how if we don't have curiosity, play, you'll find some.
You'll find it. You know? Yeah.
It's
yeah.
through play as a child where we learn about ourselves and we find the curiosity and we find a direction in life. And, you know, I think part of his legacy is remember to play. This is life is just one big game. So play it the best you can. And
yeah, play it with love.
With
play
love. It with,
yeah. Yeah. I love that. Nikki, thank you for gifting us your time today, for bringing Tommy T here into this conversation and Tommy's field and all the work that you do. Listeners, I'm going to drop the link in the show notes for her beautiful book, Tommy's Field, Love, Loss, and the Goal of a Lifetime. You don't have to be a parent who lost to find so much meaning and beauty and inspiration in this book. So highly encourage you to get it. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us on Grief as a Sneaky Bitch today.
Thank you. Loved it.
Well, that was another beautiful conversation exploring the messy, beautiful, painful journey of life and loss. Nikki's memoir, Tommy's Field, is an inspiring read. I encourage you to pick up a copy at your favorite local bookstore or at any online bookseller. And remember, don't wait to tell the people you care for how much you love them and what they mean to you. Don't forget, you can pre-order my forthcoming book, Grief is a Sneaky Bitch, An Uncensored Guide to Navigating Loss. And when you do, message me to get yourself that party invite. Oh, and this season, don't forget to check out my new YouTube channel at Lisa Kefauver, MSW. Thank you for listening. If you found it helpful, don't forget to share this episode with others who might need it too. If you do it on socials, don't forget to tag me at Lisa Kefauver MSW. And of course, if you loved it, leave a 5-star rating and write a review. I want to thank Mike Moody at Permanent Record for the audio engineering support and Giles Smith of Alafia Sounds for providing the music. Until next time, my friends, I see you, I hear you, and I'm holding you in my heart.